Soul. This one's called Wall of Glass.
Liam, I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Before we get into this week's episode, I just really want to give a final push for the show on this Friday, which is the 11th of October at the Water Rats. Just to clarify what's going on, it's me hosting an interview and then Q&A with the legendary Alan McGee, who of course discovered Oasis, as well as various other bands, managed various other bands. I'll be doing an interview with him, and then there'll be a Q&A where you could get to ask your questions to Alan. Please come down if you're anywhere near London. Get down there, come and support me, come and say hello, come and support the podcast. Yeah, it would be really, really great to see you down there. Also, there's a fantastic new band playing called The Clockworks. The Clockworks have just released their debut single, which was called Bills and Pills, which was absolutely fantastic. A really, really great record. So, yeah, great opportunity to see, you know, a really exciting new up-and-coming band in an unbelievable, brilliant little venue. So, yeah, if you can get down there, please do come on down.
Into Charlie. Charlie is a speed freak. David likes to dabble, but he's scared to be in trouble. Jack smoking is chronic. I swear Matt's an alcoholic. Karen turns to pills when the bills turn into double. Hannah's into Charlie. Charlie is a speed freak. David likes to dabble, but he's scared to be in trouble. Jack smoking is chronic. I swear Matt's an alcoholic. Karen turns to pills when the bills turn into double. But the bills keep coming, so the pills keep coming. The bills keep coming, so the pills keep.
I'm going to get there early as well. I think the doors to the back room there are open sort of 7:30. I'm going to be there from probably about 4:30. So if you can get down there early, then please do. The pub part in the front is open. Come and say hello. I'm going to be doing some recording as well. Because the good thing about this one, I don't have to do anything. Like in the one in May, I had to sort of set everything up and I was singing and I was doing other things. This one, I'm clear. All I've got to do is turn up, do the interview, and then that's about it. So yeah, I'm going to be around doing a bit of recording. We might even do an Oasis trivia showdown. So if you can come down early, you might get a match, which would be really cool to do. So yeah, come on down. It'd be great to see you there. Tickets are available if you go to my pinned tweet or top message on Facebook, or if you go to the description of this episode, you'll be able to find the link. Or just search Alan McGee Water Rats, it will come up. Or you probably will be okay to turn up on the night. Capacity's 200. We're about 100 at the moment, just over. So it's going to be a really good turnout, but I'd like to get it from busy to rammed, which would be absolutely brilliant. All right, plug over. Oh, well, one final plug. And then after that one, we've got 1st of November up in Glasgow with Tony McCarroll. But I'll talk about that one a little bit more next episode, which should be really, really good. Well, what are we doing today? So I haven't got a main interview today. I've done an interview with a chap called Chris Elliott, who did the strings on Liam's last album. There's a couple of bits just to iron out on that one. So that will be coming out next time, but I really wanted to get an episode out to you guys before the Friday show, to be honest, to give that a final plug. But also because quite a lot has happened in the world of the Gallagher brothers. So we have had Liam's Unplugged, and we've had Noel's very interesting Hot Ones interview as well, and there's been a few other bits and pieces. Plus, I've had some very cool stuff in from you guys, so I thought we'd drop some of those bits in there. Well, I just want to start with the fact that I mentioned it last week, that friend of the show, Michael Hart, the Aussie guy we've interviewed a couple of times, he jammily and very upsetting for me secured an interview with Liam Gallagher recently. And I am still talking to him, and in doing so, I've just had a quick chat with him, and he's very kindly said we can play a few clips of this audio. Now, this isn't going to be out anywhere else, we don't think, because it was a written sort of online article that he did. So this is exclusive. Here's Michael, and then we'll introduce these clips of this never-before-heard interview with Liam Gallagher. All right, welcome to the Oasis podcast, Michael Hart. How the hell are you, man?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. So I'm just about to drop in these little clips that you've given me from this little chat that you had with your mate Liam. How the hell did that come about?
My new best friend Liam.
Yeah, I know. it's so weird. When I emailed you back and said, like, I was talking about the quality of the clip, and I'm like, yeah, I might have to bolster Liam's vocal a bit, but it's like, this is weird. It's like you're talking to Liam. Very strange.
Yeah, tell me about it. It was super surreal actually speaking to the man himself, just like having 15 minutes one-on-one to chat with him. It was bizarre. And like speaking to him while I'm sat in my kitchen.
That is weird. And like just the fact that, you know, it just seemed like I heard little clips, and I know you sent me a little bit of the transcript and stuff, but it just seemed like you got on really well. It just seemed like a nice, fun chat, really.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, you know, I was quite nervous beforehand. Just, you know, as I do with most interviews that I ever do, it's like, how's this going to go? Is he going to be in? Is the person going to be in a good mood? But I think, as you've said on this show before, and other people have said, because he is it now, he has to do the interviews. I think he's kind of come out of his shell a little bit and accepted that he kind of has to, you know, speak to people and be a good interview subject, as opposed to, you know, Noel doing it or doing it with Andy and Gam or whoever else, and, you know, being like a gruff person that says like one word answers.
Yeah, because it's cool. Yeah, to be like the cool, surly, you know, like, quiet, cool person. And you're like...
Whereas now, he has to be the salesperson now, so he's actually got to be out there and speak, and, you know, speak well, which is great.
Yeah, no, it is. It's great. And so just tell us how it came about. So it's this magazine that... an online magazine and things that you've done some work for before.
So there's an online magazine that I've done some stuff for... before, and obviously because Liam's coming out here in December, he is doing press, and I guess it's around the time of the album as well. It was just the thing of, like, we've got some time with Liam, do you want to do it? Which, you know, took me about 3 seconds to answer with yes. Then just, like, the next day, got a phone call, and had a chat to him for 15 minutes, and that was it. Like, it was amazing, really. But it was like just a really nice chat. Like, I've spoken to people before in, you know, lesser bands that aren't even the front person, that are way harder to get anything out of and, you know, have a discussion with. But, you know, it was to be honest with you, like, and this is, you know, a pretty lame thing to say, but I feel like we could have gone out for a pint afterwards.
Right. It was just
the way that the conversation went, and, you know, I think I kind of showed to him that I knew my shit, which I think is important with someone like him. And it just seemed like we were having a good chat, like friends sort of thing.
Fantastic. So just in terms of the practicality, like, did he phone you? So did you get the phone call and it was like, this is Liam? Or was it like someone phoned you and said, right, it was like the manager and they passed the phone to Liam, sort of thing?
No, the way these things usually work is the label organizes it, and then there's like a phone service that connects with him, and then because he's probably doing like, I don't know, four four or five interviews in like one after the other.
Right.
So they're the people that kind of manage the time, and you know, so it's like you've got 15 minutes, and then they tell you when you've got maybe like a minute left or something like that.
Right.
And then once that's done, they connect him to the next person and the next person, etc.
Okay, that's fine. That makes sense. And I was thinking when I spoke to, because I've never really done like a junket thing like that before. Like it's always been a specifically organized thing. And the one thing that's closest to that was when I spoke to Ricky Hatton, I like spoke to his manager beforehand, and the manager's like, right, you've got 10 minutes. I'm handing the phone over to Rick now. You know, don't take the piss. And I was like, yes, sir. You know,
yeah.
But no, oh, that's fantastic. So you haven't got his number then, basically?
No, I don't have his number.
Okay.
You know, that's fine. I'm happy with having the recording of the conversation and some of the stuff that we spoke about that was I'll keep for myself forever, basically.
Yeah. That's absolutely fantastic, mate. Oh, that's brilliant. Well done. And the article's gone up a couple of days ago. It's got some good traction. Are they happy with it?
Yeah, I think people seem to be happy with it. I mean, it's, you know, for a 15-minute interview, it was 700 words. So a lot of what was in the interview didn't make the article. A couple of the snippets of which I've sent you and everyone's about to hear. And then there's some other stuff that may go somewhere else if I feel like it. And then there's some stuff that's just for me.
Brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic, mate. Oh, the only other thing I was going to say from the Australian point of view is the recent interview that Noel did with the Today program over there, where he actually gave the clearest indication for a long time that he's, you know, he actually said never say never. What did you think about that?
I thought that was quite interesting, especially because there's been a couple of other interviews recently. There was one with The Face recently, and there was that interview he did where he was eating all the hot wings.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, an amazing half an hour of YouTube video, where he, you know, to me, it seemed like he was the furthest away from not wanting to get the band back together. The furthest away from wanting to get the band back together.
Yeah.
You know, him talking about, you know, if Oasis was still going now, we'd still be doing the same thing over and over again.
Sure.
And so I don't know. It's interesting, but I don't think we should read too much into it. I don't think it's ever going to happen, to be honest with you.
I think it's one of those things that he's like, I was thinking maybe because it's like an Australian, just random kind of old geezer that...
Yeah.
You know, he was a bit more willing to sort of, you know, like he probably wouldn't have said that to an NME person because they know better. But actually,
and especially because it's, you know, it's an interview for morning TV, so
exactly
the questions are kind of like a surface level kind of thing. You know, inevitably he's going to be asked about is the band getting back together, and you know, I think from one interview to the next, he changes his mind in the same way that, you know, all of us change our mind about all sorts of things. It just so happens that he's changing his mind about getting a band that is, you know, big and important back together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Wonderful. All right, well, I'm so pleased for you that you got it. Obviously, I'm insanely jealous, and I think it's very wrong and it's not fair, and you should have refused it and let me do it. I would have put on an Aussie accent. That would have been no problem at all. But no, well done, mate, and thank you very much for firing the clips over, and yeah, here they are.
And so do you think there'll be potentially different Oasis songs in the set to when you were out last time?
Oh yeah, there definitely will be. Yeah, we've got some rehearsals coming up. We're doing like Sad Song, we're doing Stand By Me, we're doing Lighter, we're doing Roll With It. So yeah, we're changing it up a bit, but we'll still have the classics in there. Like, oh, we start with Rock and Roll Style, it'll always be Supersonic, Wonderwall, Champagne Supernova. So there's enough in there to keep everybody happy, you know what I mean?
And so I've read a couple of interviews before where you've said that you wanted to make a pure punk album. Do you think you've achieved that yet, or do you think that's still in the works?
No, no way. No way, man. That could be the next one, man. But I always want to make, you know, I'm one of them. I've got that kind of attitude where it's like, look, I always start off going, look, let's fucking make a proper punk rock record. But as soon as we get in there and you hear this tune, it sounds like once, you go, ah, nah, fuck it. Let's carry on with this. This is a magnitude, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
One day I'm gonna stick to me guns, you know what I mean, and just go, look, let's make a proper full on butt to the floor, no ballads. But just, and I don't mean that a punk rock album like where it's, you know, I want, it's gotta have punk, it's gotta have big choruses, man, it's gotta have that, it's gotta be like the Pistols, you know what I mean? I don't wanna make some fucking shitty little punk record like these so called punks do today, you know what I mean? I wanna make it like Nevermind the Bollocks, big anthems, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm doing that
and saying
that and doing it are two different things, you know what I mean? But I would love to do a fucking full on out and out 10 song Abbott, like Nevermind the Bollocks.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Double track all the rhythm guitars, double track the fucking lot. So it sounds like the Pistols meets ABBA.
Wouldn't it? And the other thing, the other track that has been around basically since you started being solo is Alar, but it hasn't come out yet. What's the story with that?
Yeah, I love that song. I don't know, man. Nothing's really happening with it. Maybe it will never happen. But I like playing it live, you know what I mean? And I like the fact of having little songs there that no one's got, you know what I mean? They just have little live versions, but I might do it on my iPhone one day and just put it out like that, you know what I mean? Because it needs to sound small and demo-y and lost. I don't want it to, every time I do it, it kind of sounds fucking big, and I don't want it to be big. I want it to sound like lost and ghostly, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope it happens.
But with modern technology these days, everything sounds fucking big and beautiful, and it's all just super duper. I want it to sound fucked and shit and lost, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So there we go. There's an exclusive for you, and actually some really good, interesting questions there by Michael. So we know what's going on with Alar, which we didn't know before. We've had a bit more clarification on the punk rock thing. And yeah, we know about the set list. I think they said Lila, Roll With It, sad song. So good to know. Great work, Michael. Thank you very much. And you guys can check out that article on the Tone Deaf website, and I'll do a link to it in my description, and you can follow Michael at What a Mind Blast. Alright, so first off, let's have a little chat about Liam's MTV Unplugged. And anyone can walk up to you, anyone can see right through your eyes all night, and I don't need to be unkind, but I see what see. So overall, I thought this was a really good show. I really, really enjoyed it. I don't think it's quite up at the, you know, Noel Gallagher doing Oasis Unplugged back in the 90s. I mean, it doesn't hit that pinnacle, but, you know, boy, hey, what does? That was such an incredible show. Overall, I thought it was a great choice of venue. I think that building in Hull is absolutely beautiful. I thought it was a perfect sort of size for it. The crowd in Hull, obviously really passionate, really into it. You know, it was a bit of a weird one, really. For an unplugged gig, it felt like a gig. You know, this didn't feel like, you know, when you see the famous, like, old, you know, the Oasis one, or even like the famous Nirvana Unplugged in New York, where you see everyone sitting, you know, sitting down, and it's much more of that intimate setting. This was basically a full Liam Gallagher gig, but the only difference is, you know, the drummer's using kind of brushes and they haven't really got electric guitars going. But still, you know, a lot of the electric guitar parts were just sort of being played by organs and things like that. So it wasn't really a typical unplugged gig. It was more of just like a full-on Liam gig. And also the way Liam performs, you know, it's not like, you know, with the famous, like, Eric Clapton, when he does, like, Layla Unplugged, and he completely reworks the song, and so it's much quieter, and he sings it much quieter. He's almost like whispering it rather than screaming it. What will you do when you get lonely? No one waiting by your side. You've been running, hiding much too long. You know it's just your foolish plan. Got me on my knees, dear, begging, darling. Whereas Liam doesn't do whisper. You know, all he does is 100%. So he's not going to do like a transformative, very different style show. It is going to be a typical Liam going for it performance, but it just so happens that the band, you know, is a slightly different setup to normal, which is cool. It would have been nice to actually have a much more sort of acoustic-y thing, and I'd like to see Liam, you know, maybe try and change it up a little bit with the way he sings, but it's just not going to happen. That's all he does, really, is just go for it like that. So yeah, I think the first few songs, especially from the solo stuff, sounded a little bit off. I think, as I mentioned, there's sort of moments when, you know, other instruments would be playing, like the lead guitar part, whether it be organs and things like that, and I just thought it was a little bit strange. I think the strings were excellent throughout, and when we speak to Chris Elliott next week, you know, I think the strings on the new album are absolutely fantastic. So it was really, really good to hear those new songs. And I think generally the new songs sounded great. They didn't sound out of place. They didn't sound weaker. Didn't sort of think, oh, it's time for a new song, well, I'll probably zone out a little bit. No, they sounded just as good and just as strong as the older songs. However, to be fair, when Bonehead came on in the second half of the show and he started playing a lot more Oasis songs, and Bonehead's rhythm guitar kind of bolstered the sound a little bit, I think it did come up a notch in that part. So whether it was Bonehead's rhythm guitar or just the quality of songs or whatever, I'm not sure, but it did, I think, really step up a notch when Bonehead came out. And it was great to see Bonehead there for so long as well. You know, it's not just like one or two tracks. He was there for a good, what, five or six songs, so that was really great. And Liam, generally, I think his voice was excellent throughout, and I think he was really pleased with how it was going. You know, he knew that the scrutiny was going to be on. You sort of saw him between songs a few times, sort of saying things like, you know, sort of being really thankful and appreciative of the crowd. And, you know, he finished it with that sort of funny statement of like, I hope it wasn't too painful for you or something like that. And, you know, so I think he was a little bit concerned about doing this, and especially with the history of it, you know, with the fact that he pulled out of the Oasis one 25 years ago. Yeah, that was always, you know, potentially there in the back of his mind. You know, his vocals are going to be a bit more exposed in this sort of setting, you know, with it being recorded for MTV. If you're honest and you say that you did, you know that I would give you my hand, or a sad song in a lonely place. I'll try to put a word in for you. Need a shoulder. Well, if that's the case, you know there's nothing I wanna do. Well, we're living in this town. The sun is coming up and it's going down. But it's all just the same at the end of the day. Now, I think you can tell throughout that, you know, he knows he's done it. He knows he's nailed it, and he's really, really pleased about that. And his attitude throughout it is really good. You know, you don't have a lot of the sort of arguing with sound people that he's been doing a lot of in the last couple of years. I say I don't think his band is necessarily the strongest still, but, you know, those tracks with Bonehead especially, I think, are really good. So yeah, generally I think it's a really good show. I don't think I'll like dig out the audio and play it randomly. I really liked it. So well done, Liam. How many special people change? How many lives are living strange? Where were you while we were getting high? We were getting high. We were getting high. We were getting high. We were getting high. We were getting high.
I'll see you again down the road. Nice one. Appreciate it.
And then the other big news this week for Noel was he's done various bits and pieces of interviews, but the big one that he did that appears to have got quite a lot of traction was his interview on Hot Ones, the first We Feast show Hot Ones, which I really enjoyed. It was really good that, you know, it was a nice long interview. There wasn't that many questions about, you know, Liam and getting Oasis back together, which was good. And he spoke eloquently on lots of different topics. He was sort of jumping in with his sort of funny little points, little asides. You know, I thought it was really good. I really appreciated, you know, the length of the interview and just that format. I thought worked really well, you know, as you see him sort of go up the heat levels on the things. And, you know, one of the things I thought was funny, I mentioned it on Twitter, is that I was confused at first because they bleeped out a couple of words, but then they kept in a lot of swearing. And I was thinking, well, what are they doing? Have they just missed him sort of saying the F word because they couldn't understand his accent? I just couldn't get my head around it. But then someone replied to me on Twitter, and I think what it is that he used the British slang word for cigarettes. But obviously in America especially, that is known as like slur for homosexuals, which is like, okay. So I thought it was quite funny that they kept in all these proper full-on swear words, and that's what got bleeped. So I thought that was strange, and it says a lot about the current kind of culture we're in, really, but there you go.
Are you still into the NFL? I haven't met many Brits that are into that variety of
football. Well, I do like it. Once I'd worked out the rules, I just love watching it because it looked fantastic and all the players looked like space age and all that, but I didn't know how it worked. And then once I'd worked out that it's, hang on a minute, he's got, there's three goals to get the ball 10 yards, and if you don't do that on the fourth one, you've got to fucking launch it up the pitch. I was like, hang on a minute now. Okay, right, I get this now. And if I'm ever touring America during the football season, there's nothing better than on a Sunday kind of lying in a nondescript hotel room in fucking Buffalo, hungover, watching three games of American football while eating fucking mashed potatoes and f***ing for breakfast. There's nothing better than that.
We've also had a message in about that interview primarily and about a couple of other bits and pieces from our friend Danny in Ireland. So let's cross over to Danny.
Hello to everybody at the Oasis podcast. This is Danny O'Hanlon. I just thought I'd send in a quick message mainly about the Hot Ones episode. It was a real surprise to see Noel Gallagher on that. He doesn't really do very many of these kind of American podcasty kind of things. I thought it was great to see him pop up on this. One thing I did notice is that he was barely eating those wings. He was taking the tiniest little bites out of them. But although, to be fair, he was biting the bits that had the hot sauce on them, so I guess he was still kind of playing the game. I thought he was really funny. I like that show anyway, but I thought he was really funny on it. I liked his comments on the names of the bottles when he was saying, like, the bomb from Beyond Insanity or whatever, like, terrible Noel impression. I can do a better Noel impression than that, but I'm not going to repeat it. I thought he was really funny, and he kept it together even as he was like suffering under the heat of those wings. It still ended up being a pretty funny interview. I thought he was very entertaining on it, and I'd like to see him do more of those kind of podcasts. I'd like to see him show up on like WTF with Marc Maron or something like that. I think he'd be great on something like that. As well as that, I love the EPs. I don't know I know that you've reviewed the EPs as they've come out, but I really want to come out and say I think they're great. I think it seems to me like it's a proper musical sort of experiment. He's obviously listening to a lot of this Top of the Pops stuff from the 80s, or he says he was anyway, and it's really like he's gone out of his way to sort of do it almost like a genre exercise or something. I think they're brilliant. I think the only song that's really let them down so far is Evil Flower. But like A Dream Is All I Need to Get By is a great song. Black Star Dancing is a great song. The Black Star Dancing EP is great. The three I know there's remixes on there, but the three songs on there I think are brilliant. I think are as good as anything off Who Built the Moon. I think is an ex. I think this is the difference between him and Liam, is that I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think Liam thinks like that. I don't think Liam thinks it has any kind of musical concepts and ideas going into the studio for his next album. Whereas I think Noel actually goes out of his way to experiment with stuff and has a thing in his head where he's thinking, all right, I'm going to pretend that I'm a pop musician from the 80s and this is what I would be playing on Top of the Pops as an experiment. I think it's paid off handsomely. And when the thing is finished, when there's three EPs done, you just, you know, you put it together on Spotify, you make your own album out of it, everybody's happy, you know. I just thought I'd mention them because I think... just in the midst of all the Liam stuff at the moment, people are going nuts for the new Liam album, and there is some good songs on it. I will say, I listened to it the day it came out. It was kind of a sunny morning. I listened to it walking to work. I really enjoyed it. I haven't really felt the need to go back to it. I have to be honest. I haven't gotten near it since, and I haven't really wanted to, whereas I've played the shit out of these two EPs that have come out so far. It might have been a one-shot wonder for me. So I don't mean to make it. Like, I know that it's, you definitely have a very Liam positive podcast out there, and I'm glad you do, because I think he gets a rough ride with some other corners of the press. So I am glad that this podcast is, you know, shining a light, if you like, on Liam's stuff and how good it is and how much he's improved since the last album. And he is, look, he's definitely doing his thing. Some of the production on the new album kind of annoyed me. They will insist on having those George Harrison style guitar solos in there. I think that's forcing a sort of a cheapo Beatle-ness. It's not even Beatley. It's Jeff Lynne-esque. It's like forcing this kind of Jeff Lynne production on it where you don't need it. I think there's some of those songs on there. I can't think of any specific examples, but I do remember listening to it and thinking, you know, these songs would come up with these sort of Jeff Lynne, George Harrison, Cloud Nine kind of guitar solos on it. And I just think there's no need for that. Like, you know, it's dragging that song into a kind of sound, that kind of Jeff Lynne 80s sound that isn't even Beatley. It's George and Jeff. It's not Beatley. It doesn't sound anything like the Beatles. But I do think it drags it into that sound when perhaps the song doesn't need to be dragged in that direction. And it just churns up a load of criticism from dickheads like me, where none was really needed. The song didn't sound anything like that genre when it started, but I feel like some of these producers just drag it in that direction because that's, you know, Liam's known for his love of John Lennon and the Beatles and all that. But anyway, I digress. I love the Noel Gallagher High Flying Birds EPs that are coming out at the moment. I could personally do without the 12-inch remixes, and Evil Flower wasn't much of a tune, but the other five songs I thought were top drawer, thought were brilliant. And Noel is a funny bastard and should do more of these podcasts, more of those kind of American shows, because I think they're designed for someone like him with his controversial opinions and whatnot. Anyway, thanks for letting me rant on. That's if you use this. If you don't worry about it. That's all good.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much. Yeah, a couple of really good points there. I know what you mean about Noel's new stuff. Yeah, I do really enjoy the five tracks that he's released other than Evil Flower. I'm the other way around. I like heard them all and listened to them all quite a bit when they came out, but now I'm like, yeah, fine. I don't need to listen to Black Star Dancing, This Is The Place again. Dream Is All I Need To Get By, I think I'll probably dig out a little bit more. Sail On, possibly. But yeah, they're not jumping out at me. Whereas Liam's album, I'm more than happy to keep going back to. And I can kind of see that being the case in the future. So yeah, whether that's just the vocal or the style of music, I don't know. But that's tends to be where I'm laying right now. I don't try to be either biased towards any of them. I just try to be, you know, honest and fair and sort of what I put out tends to be a fair assessment of what comes in, you know, from other people. So yeah, it's interesting that you made that point, really, but you know, we'll see. And yeah, I do agree. I think I mentioned previously about the very George Harrison-y guitar solo. Yeah, it is, you're absolutely right, it's probably a bit more sort of Jeff Lynne Cloud Nine-ish rather than, you know, something, or Here Comes the Sun, or that sort of style, Harrison guitar solo. So anyway, good stuff. And then the other interview that was interesting that came up this week, where Noel did talk about Oasis reunion, and I thought it was interesting because, you know, his wording seems to have calmed down a lot. You know, a little while ago, he was, I think, when Liam, you know, with the whole, like, Liam sending threatening texts to an Ace and stuff like that, you know, the wording was so negative. It was just like, you know, an Oasis reunion is never, ever happening. But yet in this interview, he does say, never say never.
Oasis was great for what it was, the music and the time, and it summed up an entire generation. But it was all about the struggle. And there comes a point where you're just going, I'm too lazy for this now.
I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't say, do we never say never?
Well, reunion with, well, it's not for me. It would have to be some extraordinary circumstances that brought me and Liam back together. There would have to be and I'm not saying those extraordinary circumstances don't exist, but if I close my eyes and look into the future, I don't see it. But of course, who knows? Who knows? I mean, I know better than anyone, but, you know, but I mean, yeah, you should never say never, but.
So, yeah, I mean, it sounds a little bit more positive. I mean, he's still obviously saying no, but it's no with, you know, a slightly less definite no than it's been previously. So a few weeks ago, we did the A to Z for Champagne Supernova. We had some really good responses on that, some good breakdowns. One of the things we didn't have was a track-by-track breakdown. And we've had that now from our good friend Paul Costello. So let's go over to this from Paul.
Hey, James. Hopefully all is well. It's Paul here, and I'm dropping you a breakdown on Champagne Supernova. Now, I know this is a bit late and you've already had two messages on it, which were very good breakdowns, but I was purposely waiting to see what kind of messages you got, because I knew you would get lots of people breaking the song down. I didn't want to be doing the same thing, and they covered it very well, so I'm going to do something a little bit different. So what I've done was I went to YouTube, where you can get all the isolated tracks of the song, well, most of them anyway. I have pulled them all together into my audio editor here. So I'm kind of rebuilding the track, as it were. So I have a track with the vocals, I have the drums, I have the bass, I have some of Noel's guitars, and I also have another track with more guitars and various bits and pieces on it. So I'm going to start off with the track where Noel is playing. Also, Paul Weller's solo is on this. It's a nice clean tone it starts off with. Here's a little clip of it. So that runs through all the verse parts. It's basically just Noel kind of noodling away as he does. Jumping a bit into the track, then I'll play you some of the more heavier parts that's on this track. Now, if we jump ahead a bit to the guitar solo, this is Paul Weller's solo. So, I think in isolation it sounds a little bit weird. In the song it works, but by itself as a solo, it's a bit strange. But I will throw in a bit of the bass just to give it a bit of context. Next bit of interest on Noel's guitar track is the part where you have the two guitars octave playing the same part, which occurs twice in the song, so I'll play you some of this. Drops into the final verse there. I'm in two minds as to whether that's two guitars or three. It's part of me thinks it's two, and then sometimes I think it's three. Now, the last bit of interest on this guitar track of Noel's is right at the very end of the song. He does a repeated pattern, which sounds very nice. And then we go into the section where the marching snare drum comes in, and there's some nice playing there. So I'll skip to that now. For some reason all the tracks end at that point. It's not exactly the very end of the song as it is on the record, but the tracks on YouTube all cut out a little bit early, but most of the stuff is there. Okay, now moving to the next track. This is basically a track which has a few different things on it. There's some electric guitar, there's some acoustic guitar, I think there's a few bits of percussion like tambourines and stuff. There's also a triangle in here somewhere that I think I've heard. So we'll go through it, and this is how it sounds from the start. This is just the point where Liam's vocal comes in, and you can hear here this electric guitar part in the background, which I don't think I've noticed before, sort of a tremolo effect playing here that you can hear. Next up, we skipped into the big chorus before the guitar solo. There's some nice guitar parts going on here, and I've just put a bit of Liam's vocal in just to give it a bit of context, because it sounds a bit lost without it. So here's what this sounds like. Now, skipping just a tiny bit further on, there's another little bit of guitar here which sounds good. You can actually hear this on the recording, but it's a little bit clearer here. And then here we're going into the guitar solo, and on this track you have rhythm guitars, and I assume what is Noel's solo off in the distance. We'll play a little bit of that. I did mention there is a triangle in here, so right at the end of the guitar solo you have this, if you can hear it. Now moving on to the drum track. It's a really good drum performance from Alan White. It's great to get it in its full isolated form, and just playing a few bits of it to you. This is where the drums come in, and it's a sort of a soft part, but you can really hear all the little accents that he's adding on the snare drum. Now we're fast forwarding into the song. We're going into the chorus just before the guitar solo, And just going to this chorus, he does a really good fill here. This is really nice. Brilliant stuff. And now jumping on to the guitar solo, there's loads of really good fills here. I'll play some of them for you now. The great thing about these fills is you can tell that they're not sort of something he's thought about and practiced. They're just him jamming, which is really good. And just there you can hear a little section where I think it's the end of his stick is hitting off a mic or maybe a drum rim. You can just hear it there, a tiny little click. Just on that fill there. So moving on now to the bass. Overall, it's a pretty simple part, played pretty straight ahead. I know there's a lot of talk about Noel redoing or playing over some of Gwigsy's bass parts. But I'd say on this one, it might be Gwigsy. Because if you compare it to, say, even Cast No Shadow, which probably Noel did play, there's a lot going on in it. But in this one, it's really straight ahead. So if Gwigsy did play it, I don't know why Noel would need to go over it in any way or other. The only things of interest to note in the bass part is there is one section after the first full-on chorus with the full band playing. There is two bass parts playing in just one section of the song. For whatever reason, they decided to do this. So the verse part, the part that's under the verse, the downward descending, so the A, G, F sharp and E, is played on a higher register on the bass, on a higher octave. But there's also a lower octave part playing the same thing, so maybe they done two full takes, one with the higher octave, one with the lower octave, to see which worked best. And for some reason they decided to include a bit of both here in this one section. So I'll play the section, you'll hear the two parts, and then you'll hear it come back to one part. And I just thought I'd point it out because it's not many songs that have two bass parts going on together. So just one more thing to point out on the bass, I suppose, for moving on to the vocals, is just how the way it was recorded. It sounds to me like it was done on a really old amp, or, you know, an amp with a dodgy speaker, or there's a dodgy connection somewhere along between the guitar and the amp. Much like the bass from Wonderwall. When I heard the isolated bass track from Wonderwall, I was like, my God, that's awful. It sounds real dirty, and not the playing of it, I'm just talking about the recorded sound of it. But in the song, the bass part sounds really good in Wonderwall. And it's like this in the song as well. It's a sort of sound that if I was recording, I'd be like, oh, we gotta fix that amp before we record it. So I'll just play a bit to show you what I mean. You can hear there, it just sounds like there's something dodgy with the amp, to my ears anyway. So last but not least, moving on to Liam's vocals.
How many special people change? How many lives are living strange? Where were you while we were getting high?
Somebody mentioned in one of your reviews, I can't remember who it was, about the plosive that Liam does on one of the words. Of course, if that was nowadays, it would be edited out and redone, but they left it as is, so I'll just play that to you now.
In a champagne supernova.
And that's it there, but I suppose, like I said, nowadays that would be taken out and redone, but they left it as is. I think the next part of interest in the vocals is, as the song goes on, there are some falsetto vocals that come in. I don't know who's doing them. I don't think it's Noel, but it could be Noel. It's probably a group of people. But there's one part where somebody's singing along in the background and they sound like they've had a few beers.
Cause people believe that they're gonna get away for the summer.
I think that's pretty cool that they left that in there. So moving on now to the last part of interest on the vocals is underneath the guitar solo. There's obviously Liam's parts, which you can hear clearly on the record. He's harmonising over himself. But there's also some falsetto vocals in the background here as well. Na, 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 na. There you go, that's all the parts of the song that I have isolated anyway. I hope people enjoyed that, and if people did, if there's other songs in the future that have these tracks split up like this, I can do a similar project. It takes a bit of work to get them together, but I think it's worth it in the end when you can go through them, and it's great that some of the songs are like this. It'd be great if they're all like this, but I know there's very few tracks that have all the different parts split up. So like I said, if people like it, we can do more, but quite possibly we did bore the arse off people as well there, so I apologise if I did that. Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide in a champagne supernova, a champagne supernova. Cause people believe that they're gonna get away for the summer.
Great stuff, Paul. Absolutely brilliant as ever. Greatly appreciated. And no way is that boring the arse off me personally. I love isolated tracks. I don't think there's anything I really like more than hearing isolated tracks. I don't know if you guys have listened to the Beatles. Abbey Road has been re-released, but right at the end of that, when the last two bonus tracks on it are the isolated string parts from both Something and then Golden Slumbers Carry That Way, and they're absolutely amazing. I love them so much. But anyway, great stuff, and I would love it if for the 25th anniversary of What Story Morning Glory they just did a full-on breakdown, like 5 CD set just of all the outtakes, alternate versions, isolated tracks, isolated vocals. You know, they can do it. The stuff's all there. It just needs someone to physically do it. I'll do it for you. I don't know my way around a recording studio console, but I'll learn. You know, let me do it. I'll do it for free. But anyway, that's what I want, and I would pay good money for that. But there you go. Right. So one of our other regular collaborators is Ryan Harvey. He's come back to us. He's given us a lovely message here covering a couple of the tracks that have come up recently on the A to Z. Better late than never, Ryan.
This one's called Champagne Super Ugly Cunt.
Hi JC, this is Ryan Harvey at the Harvey Boys, chiming in on Oasis A to Z, playing a bit of catch-up. So I'm doing my Champagne Supernova and Cigarettes and Alcohol inputs that I would have sent. So first off, Champagne Supernova. A 5, love it, especially if you're into playing guitar, playing along to the songs. This is a brilliant one. It's obviously simple in terms of pretty much 4 chords all the way through, a few variations, but great for learning and also soloing to copy the stuff that Noel does again. I was really impressed with Ian from Columbia Tribute Band. He did the breakdown on the original episode you did. So that's already covered. Great to hear everybody shouting out Earl's Court 95 version that's on the There and Then DVD. Unanimously, the kind of great version to watch, let's play along to. Just mental, mesmerizing. And it also, the Noel solos that they were doing then. Ian even called out the and then back up. I into the traditional Noel Unison bands. And then I particularly like the bit, I don't know why, the... bit. I just love those bits. Sometimes plays it lower down. It's a really good sort of crescendo bit, and with the drums and everything. The main thing I would mention, which I don't believe anyone mentioned, I think Ian was the main, and Khan might say, talked about the lyrics last time, but nobody mentioned, even you, JC, you talked about the cover versions. So I'll go into the live versions. The cover versions, a shout out as well to the Pretty Reckless one. I really like that. I don't know whether it's because of her voice singing it. It gives that different edge. I really like the arrangement. I've watched that loads of times. Recommend that if anyone hasn't. So the Pretty Reckless, I think it was BBC on YouTube. But the ultimate cover version, nobody mentioned.
So sometimes when you write songs, right, they're all right, but you make them into extraordinary pieces of music. I'm going to thank you for making this next song into an extraordinary piece of music, the Champagne Supernova.
That's the Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds version. So in 2015, when Noel started his tour, I think the arena tour, the Chasing Yesterday tour, so he added Champagne Supernova as the latest sort of one to get the acoustic treatment and the Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds treatment. So in a similar vein, 2006, when Noel and Gem and Terry, the drummer, went around doing those three-piece gigs, where they did Slide Away and Don't Look Back in Anger, they rearranged them to be acoustic, and then that is the acoustic Don't Look Back in Anger that we now still get, we get that permanently now from Noel. He doesn't do the electric version in C anymore. He does the acoustic version in B. So in those Slide Away and Don't Look Back in Anger, he dropped the key down half semitone, so it's instead of in A minor and C, it was down in B. But this, in this way, in Champagne Supernova, so he's arranged it with capo. So the original recording is the, as Ian went through, the A sus2, so you just open, no capo, open strings. And you're doing the bass note with your fingers and thumb. So this time, Noel has put a capo on the third, doing based around a G shape. So that's actually B flat. So we've basically gone up a semitone this time. So instead of being in A, the song is now in, or variations of A and A minor, as Ian covered, is now in B flat. And he does some just open voicing, so where the G chord with just two fingers. Now I did, I immediately loved this, and I did a YouTube video lesson of this because I figured it would get some hits as soon as those videos started coming out that he'd got this new version arranged. So I quickly grabbed a couple of the first videos that people had posted from the gigs and was able to see exactly what he was doing with his fingers and put it all together in a video. That lesson's got 41,000 hits now, most of them in the first kind of year after. So that was pretty good. But yeah, I loved this, and he's just kind of keeping his, in true Noel style, keeping his little finger in one place. Go for G, and then a F's as to a C. Hammering on to A minor over G, you know, I'm not going to go into it. You can see the lesson on YouTube, Ryan Harvey channel on YouTube. Just search Champagne Supernova acoustic version. It'll come up at some point. So yeah, I guess it was slower, or a little bit slower than normal, acoustic based. And it was great at the gig. So I went to Leeds that year, 2015. It was actually my birthday. I actually took my 8-year-old son, who is now rocking out as a drummer, at the ripe old age of 11. I took him with me to his first gig. It was pretty late. He was nearly asleep by the end of it. But I do remember standing there at Champagne Supernova with him. It's one of the Oasis treats in the Noel Gallagher High Flying Birds gigs in 2015. He also carried on playing it. 17 with U2, stopped playing it again now, I think. So now he's done Stop Crying Your Heart Out is the latest one to get acoustic treatment. He hasn't changed it, actually. It's just, yeah, acoustic version with him singing. What I didn't like about the 2015 version was Tim Smith's solo. So they keep the solo in. So after the sort of second chorus where it goes into the crazy solo that you love on the live versions, it's not as crazy on the recorded version. Well, I guess it's the Paul Weller solo, but it was quite prominent on the live versions. That was the focus of that whole section. Noel going nuts with the, but Tim Smith, because he'd done an acoustic, he just did this. Beginner guitar solo lesson, but I think, and then Gem came back thankfully in 2017, but even he was the one who rearranged the Don't Look Back in Anger solo, and that was really good. I actually didn't like it initially, but it grew on me because it's no longer a fast upbeat version. You can't just play the same solo over it. But no, Gem managed to rearrange that, and you know, sounded amazing in 2006, and they obviously keep playing that version now as well. And then, but then, so Gem then had a go at this, but even he was sort of struggling to just sort of. But he, at least he did a little bit more, it came to life a little bit more than. For like 16 bars. Whew, not good. So that was, yeah, the only downside on that was that it was missing. So, or maybe they should have cut the solo out, I don't know. So live versions. There's a couple in 95 of kind of the US things earlier in the year. They are doing that full sort of 10-minute version with the drum outros at the end. So that's what they do. The Earl Scott version, basically, they do the song as in the recording, and then they go into this varying tempo drum beats with Noel soloing. You know, you're kind of repeating bits of the solo in slightly different ways, using his wah pedal, and just going generally crazy for another sort of 3 minutes on the end of the song. We got the, in 96 also, we got the MTV Awards. Yes, and that was the one where Liam caused an uproar by, I mean, he was gibbering a bit during the performance, obviously high on something, life maybe. And he ends up spitting on the stage at the end. I actually remembered it that he spat on the crowd, but I don't think he did.
You're having a great time, and you know you're having a time. You're too scared to say it, old mate.
The Main Road in April 96, those two nights. Again, it's similar to the Earl's Court version. So that same version played there, as well as at Nebworth. And then at Nebworth, you get the John Squire on. Was it the second night, joins them, and I think universally people don't really rate that him soloing on that was just not the same, and he's not doing it in the same sort of style. It's not over the top, outlandish that probably would have wanted for Nebu. So then 97, G-Mex, they do the same version, Be Here Now tour. I think the ending is even another minute longer of different drum beats from Alan, but still pretty much the same. So then we get to Standing on the Shoulder of Giants. So obviously this was one of those that got played. So from Morning Glory onwards was played all the way through. Never dropped from the set, I don't think. So 2000, obviously the main reference point there is the Familiar to Millions gig. And now we have Gem. So we actually get some of the lead parts. Original Oasis lineup, you had Noel taking responsibility for everything lead and anything like the... He had to do that as well as lead. So often he would do just little bits of lead in between the chords. So like on Don't Look Back in Anger. On that bit, he'd just go or something like that, like quickly, just so that there is some lead in there. But otherwise, him and Burnett are both in chords, especially while Noel's having to sing as well. But now in 2000, we got Gem. So Gem starts to do some of the stuff on the record. So, you know, some of that intro stuff, which is nice to actually have it a bit more like the recording in the live setting. So they did that with a lot, you know, Don't Look Back in Anger. Yeah, the Master Plan as well, which we finally, eventually later on, got the recording-like performance of the Master Plan with all the guitar bits as well. So yeah, in 2000, they stopped the long outro now, but they do have Gem doing sort of more soloing in between, so adding a bit more flavour to it. Noel cuts back on the crazy solo, so he does the solo, but he's changed it to a sort of slightly different pattern and doing a bit of whammy bar, so it's not as good, I don't think, as those earlier versions. And that's the version they then continue to play throughout, I think. So 2002, He Heathen Chemistry. Same thing, Alan White's still there. And 2004, it's the same version, but then this is where we hit another key piece of Oasis history, is Zach Starkey on the drums. Champagne Supernova is quite slow anyway, so it's not too bad, but he played everything so slow. And I don't know if anyone, I've never heard the band refer to it, but how much is he to blame for those? Because, you know, Glastonbury 2004 got panned, I think. In general, maybe it was going to happen anyway, but it did not help that Zach Starkey was playing almost too slow, that you almost had to go in slow-mo yourself to sing along, which surely takes the energy out of a crowd, especially a sort of a mainstream or, you know, festival going crowd that they're just there for the Don't Look Back in Anger, Wonderwall. So Champagne Supernova gets it's not too bad. I think it was Don't Look Back in Anger, things like that, where you really, really hurt it. And Liam was almost singing in slow-mo, singing, you know, fairly badly at that period as well. So again, there's lots of reasons, but I just think if there'd have been more energy in those performances, faster pace, maybe they wouldn't have been struggled quite so much, but maybe there was a reason they had to slow down. Slip inside behind your mind, and don't you know you might. So yeah, Glastonbury 2004, we had the 2005 Manchester City Stadium is the other reference point there. And then on to Dig Out Your Soul, the 2008 stuff. So you have the Wembley, I think it was Wembley Arena gig, wasn't it? In 2008. So now we have Chris Sharrock on the drums, and yeah, normal service is resumed. So he had some nice cymbal-y kind of intros, make it a bit more washy, like the beginning of the recording where you have the sort of waves. He adds a bit more cymbals going in there, and then you've got Gem doing the nice.
Oh.
So yeah, it comes back to life, I think, here. And then Noel's still doing the same solo, and they're not really doing the long outro. So they continue to perform it, and but it remains pretty much the same all the way through the noughties, I guess. And then the last performance, I guess, is the V Festival, 22nd of August, Stafford, 2009. So that's the last outing for Champagne Supernova with Noel and Liam, of course. They've both done it separately since.
So 2015, Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds version, as we've covered, improved by Gem in 16-17. And then Liam has brought into his set with the piano-based version, which they've been fighting with. So as we talked about the As It Was cinema review when they did that gig, the timing was awful. They'd done it prior to that. But they're now in the MTV Unplugged version, although that's probably had some post-editing. The drummer's doing the shaker, as we sort of said that it should do, so that the piano and Liam are seemingly now keeping in time. To me, it's a bit flat, and you know, it's missing Noel, etc., etc., which I think a few of them, like Cast No Shadow, they're doing, Liam's doing now as well. And again, it just feels like Noel's missing there in those songs. So let's just close out with a bit of this awesomeness. Earls Court 95.
So, Cigarettes and Alcohol, JC just went through the chords on the guitar very, very simply. Whereas it's not, it's the intricacies of how you play the riffs and everything that really makes it obviously great for a guitar player. As somebody mentioned, I think this was on Now 29, which was, I think, one of the first Now albums I bought after, I think I had Now 11 on vinyl when I was really little. Now 29, and that would have been my first sort of exposure to Oasis, I think, as well. And then Now 30 had Whatever on it, if I remember rightly. Until the summer of 96, where I, you know, discovered the buzz of Oasis and everything when I was in 17, 18. Cigarettes and Alcohol, great to play along with that rock and roll riff. I guess the T-Rex rip-off is subtly different. So you're going to the higher E. Which earlier on, which T-Rex does that kind of later on. But anyway, regardless of that, we all know about that. So just a super fun song to play along to, and the solos. Got time to super research all the live versions of this. As JC mentioned, I think, again, another one which all the way through they played it. And the main difference is the, obviously, Familiar to Millions did the version with the kind of intro. Which added a bit of suspense building up to it. I think that gives us one of the, if I had to show somebody a moment to show them the awesomeness or the reason why I love it, is Noel, after he finishes that, goes up and stands on the monitors in front of Wembley Stadium, the old Wembley Stadium, and the camera is beautifully positioned behind him with the whole of Wembley Stadium in front. What a moment that is. How must that feel?
And then they did then the outro of that. So with the, was it Whole Lotta Love jamming? They never really did that again. So I guess they did that on that Standing on the Shoulder of Giants tour. I don't know how many times, but they certainly did it on those Wembley gigs. So then. The kind of piano riffing, etc. But otherwise, I think it pretty much stayed the same.
Even Zach Starkey played it at the right speed, so all good.
So just to bring up to date, let's a quick reaction. This is Liam and the Low Flying Ducks playing at his birthday the other week at the Ritz. So let's see how they're doing with cigarettes and alcohol now. Obviously, we've had some sound.
This is just called cigarettes and fucking alcohol.
Yep. Sound issues with their band, so we'll see how it goes. I've got Bonehead here though, so cheating a little bit. A little bit dirty, those guitars. Absolutely kicking off. I would not want to be stood there. Yeah, I was safely on the balcony for Noel at the Ritz, although you don't tend to get the piss-throwing mayhem at Noel anymore. Just more the gin and tonic tipping, maybe. So, but otherwise, I mean, that's exactly what a crowd going to a Liam gig wants, isn't it? Awesome. And just to close out, I'm not going to really comment on Cloudburst. I don't think I rated it. I've just listened to it again because I don't know why. Maybe I didn't have the Live Forever single. Just didn't have, because I couldn't really tell you what the song, how the song goes. So I just had a listen. It's definitely a Tony McCarroll. Yeah, no doubt about that. I think I now realise why I never really liked it. It just doesn't jump out of me. That's it for now. Thank you very much. I'll speak to you next time. Are we nearly at Don't Look Back in Anger yet? I'm sure we must be.
Well, 25 minutes of brilliance there, Ryan, and you've completely ruined it with that comment that you don't like Cloudburst and with that whatever that awful Don't Look Back in Anger cover was. I'm not happy with that at all. Cloudburst is up next on the Oasis A to Z, so we're going to do that maybe next time or time after, because we've got a busy couple of weeks coming up with lots of interesting stuff. But yeah, if you do want to do a breakdown on Cloudburst and you've got something interesting to say about it, more interesting than Ryan's just very offhand dismissal there, then please do get in touch, oasispod@gmail.com. But no, absolutely brilliant. It's great to have people like Ryan and Paul and Ian, you know, in there helping out, going back and listening to these tracks, breaking them down and going through all the live versions. It's greatly appreciated. Really helps me out as well, because it's not my speciality area and it's just less work for me. So that's all good. Right, what have we got next? Okay, so this is Patrick, and we're going to be talking a bit more about the Noel Gallagher EP.
Hi, James. Just wanted to give my review of Noel's new EP, This Is The Place. So now we've got, all three new songs and obviously the remixes. and obviously with all the hype around Liam's album and deserved hype, really, I suppose. In my review of that, I said that, you know, it was a really, really good album, and maybe I was a bit quick to jump on that. I think the initial kind of buzz probably got me a little bit, but I stand by everything I said about the songs. I haven't found myself listening to the album all the way through a lot in the last, 2 weeks now? But I have been going back to those, like, three or four or five songs that I really like on the album. So in that sense, it's fine. It's just probably not an album that I think I'll be listening to all the way through a lot, which is what I did with As You Were. You know, I listen to that constantly, and Who But The Moon is the two recent albums before that. I kind of listened to them all the way through quite a lot. So it's just one of those albums. I think it has its moments and some really good moments, and then I'm not particularly bothered about listening to it all the way through again. But anyway, sorry, onto Noel's new EP. I think it's a really solid effort, and I prefer this EP to Black Star Dancing. Not that I didn't like Black Star Dancing, and I liked all the songs that were on it. I just think this EP has a bit more of a theme to it. And obviously, I don't think that that's what Noel's particularly going for. I don't think he needs or wants to have all the songs on the EP kind of merge into one or have a running theme like Who Built the Moon did in a way. But Black Star Dancing really felt like a collection of three songs that almost from different eras. Black Star Dancing is very much of this era, Noel Gallagher, whereas I think Rattling Rose, even though it was certainly, you can tell that it was written recently because it's all themed around the bass, really. It sounds to me similar to something that Soft Chasing Yesterday. I really like the song, it's just, it sounds like that era. And then we know that Sail On, another song I really like, is a leftover from Chasing Yesterday too, which you can tell. Although I do feel Noel was kind of trying to write a song like that for a few years, and he finally achieved it, you know, the best version of it. If you think about, here's a candle for my birthday cake and I Pick You Every Time and songs like that, I think Sail On is kind of the peak of the pinnacle of those songs, and you know, I think he's done that now. So while it's lovely to have songs like that, I hope he's not, you know, doesn't keep trying to better that. I think it's fine as it is. But yeah, it felt like more of a collection of songs than anything else. None of them really seemed to match. Whereas I think with This Is The Place, the EP as a whole really flows. The three actual songs really flow nicely into each other. I love This Is The Place, the single. When it came out, it's exactly what I want Noel to be doing for ages. I really get like Jaguar vibes from it, and I love that band. So, and I know Noel's a big fan as well. That's how I got into him initially, like 6 or 7 years ago. And while I don't think he's ever gonna quite nail what they do as well as they do, and as much as I'm sure he's used a lot of other influences, I can really tell with This Is The Place where he's got those influences from. And that kind of plays into the lyrics you mentioned at the time, how, and you mentioned it since, that the lyrics don't really get you with that song. They don't really get your attention, they don't really grab you as such. They're just okay. And I'd agree with that. But at the same time, I kind of think they get a pass because the type of song isn't really, you know, it's not meant to have these groundbreaking lyrics. It'd be nice if it did, but I don't think the lyrics, they're just a part of the song. The melody doesn't come in the vocals. The melody comes with everything else going on in the background. And yeah, I love that tune. So really hoping whenever he does next play live in the UK, or whenever I get to see him maybe in Europe or somewhere, that he'll play it, because from what I've seen of him playing it on the US tour recently, it sounded really good and really big. And like Black Star Dancing was elevated for me when I saw it live, which, to be fair, this band do with pretty much every song. It's kind of one of my grievances with people being so quick to write off the new songs for whatever reason when they first hear them. And it's like, well, give them a chance to see it live maybe, and I think you'll change your mind. It happened, I think that happened with a lot of people with the songs off Who Built the Moon, really. You know, by mid-2018, that band that he got together were just at their peak. And then I saw them earlier this year in June in Dublin, and again, they were brilliant. And they just keep getting better and better, really. You know, there's such joy going to the gigs and things like that, and those songs are really lifted, and they're made a bit heavier because there's more guitars and, you know, the bass is a bit more prominent. So yeah, so really happy with This Is The Place. The next song, A Dream Is All I Need To Get By, when I first heard it, I was kind of like, yeah, it's okay. Like, I don't know, I was into, I think it was a few weeks ago, and for whatever reason, that new Green Day single, Father of All, had kind of grabbed my attention. And I was a Green Day fan when I was younger, kind of. American Idiot was the first album that I bought. And, you know, when you have that period where you just reminisce a bit. So, like, I was kind of listening to that song on repeat and kind of in the mood for that fast up-paced, not even punkier sound, just, you know, that fast up-paced kind of sound. And so Dream Is All I Need To Get By, when I listened to it, I kind of wasn't really in the mood for it, I think that was kind of the problem. I listened to it two or three times, and I just couldn't really get into it. It didn't grab me the first time, but then kind of left it a week or two, and just it came on shuffle. And I love it now. I think it's brilliant. I think the way it kind of twists and turns in the middle, it you know, it kind of pauses and it seems to go from one type of song into this kind of, I don't even know if it's a chorus or the middle eight or whatever, and it takes it somewhere else. And Noel does tend to get lazy with like putting la la la's or na na na's in. But I think in this instance, they actually work really well. You know, it's just kind of so kind of easy listening. So yeah, it's really grown on me, that song, and I really like it. And I think, again, even though obviously it's not a similar song to This Is The Place, it's definitely coming from a similar kind of space, if you get me. You know, This Is The Place was a lot of Hacienda sound, I think. And obviously, like Noel said, this is a kind of Smith's B-side, Queen Is Dead era type thing. And yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's really nice, a really good song. And tomorrow when the morning comes, I hope you can walk it like you're talking, son. Now the dream is over, the day is done. Say bye-bye, bye-bye, say bye-bye. Like Rattling Rose, I see a lot of similarities with it, but I think it's a bit above Rattling Rose, and it's kind of not maybe the production, because I think the production, all the songs are great and all the musicianship is great, but just has that bit extra that takes it a bit further. So yeah, and I really like that one. And then Evil Flower, I know you aren't really a fan at all. For me, the first minute and up until the end of that verse, I love it. I think it's so menacing and dark, and you can definitely get, I think Noel described it as like Stone Roses meets Dr. John, and I think that's definitely, actually for Noel, it's quite a good description. He tends to go pretty far out there with his, you know, outrageous descriptions of the songs, as does Liam, but I think he's kind of nailed it with that one. The only thing is I think after that first verse, it does for a minute and a half, so 2 minutes drop out, and for me, it gets repetitive very quickly. That'd be my only complaint, because like when I listen to it, I just love listening to that minute and first minute and a half over and over. I think it's brilliant. If it just had something else in that middle section before it then gets back to the refrain, whether that be a second verse or whatever, it'd be good. I think it'd really take the song up from like a, you know, middling instrumentally, a bit like Get Off Your High Horse Lady, which I don't mind. It fits fine on the album where it is, but you know, it's just one of those songs that I never really play. I think Evil Flower would be a bit like that. If it comes on shuffle, I'll listen to it. But or if I'm listening to the EP all the way through, I'll listen to it. But other than that, probably not. Just because it doesn't really have that extra segment that takes it somewhere. Noel mentioned in an interview a few months ago that he was wanting to get Tony Walsh to do some spoken word over it, and the way he described it as a song, but they were talking about Evil Flower, I believed, when he said it. So whether that's just a cross wires and it's actually that Tony Walsh is going to be doing something on the third EP, we'll obviously wait and see. But I think even a bit of spoken word in that sense, a bit like how Liam has done it in Gone, and obviously we hear it in A Beautiful World as well. In that middle bit, if you're not going to put a second verse in, actually a bit of spoken word in there could have gone, because it is such a menacing and groovy sound that I think you can get away with it in that type of song. You're not putting it on an album. It's forever going to be a B-side on an EP, you know. So if you're going to experiment with something like Evil Flower, take it the whole way and, you know, try and get something on that like that on there. But, you know, we'll see. That might come in the third EP, and I'm sure Noel knows what he's doing. So we'll see. So yeah, and overall the remixes, you know, they're fine. But overall the three songs I'm really impressed with, and the two EPs so far I'm really happy with. I mean, you know, these last 3 years for Oasis and fans of the Gallaghers, whether you're Team Liam or Noel or whatever, or you're just in between like most of us are, I think they're brilliant, and you know, there's something for everything there. I'm a bit more Noel, to be fair, not in the sense of like I'm on his side particularly. I just prefer his music. I prefer his output purely because sometimes I feel with Liam, it's maybe not Liam itself, but the people around him or whatever are churning out these Oasis-type rockers. And if I want to listen to Oasis, I go and listen to Oasis. Got 7 albums worth and all those B-sides to listen to. I don't need any more of that. So that's why, like I said in my initial review of Why Me, Why Not, I'm happier when Liam does the more poppy sounds a bit and something a bit different for him. But at the same time, I really like his new stuff as well. So it's just brilliant to have them, you know, so many songs really. We're getting another album's worth out of Noel this year, even if it's not sold as an album, which it probably will be at some point further down the line, I'd imagine, with a bonus track thrown in or something. And by all accounts, I've heard really good things about, there's a song, I believe, called Wandering Star on the next EP, which supposedly is up there. So, we'll see if that meets any expectations on that, but looking forward to it coming out. So yeah, I just wanted to give my review on that, because like I said, everything with Why Me, Not Why Not recently, I suppose with the timing of it, Noel's EP can kind of get cast aside. But I think his quality, you know, he's putting out quality output and quality songs, so it's definitely worth a mention. So sorry if I've dragged on a bit. Cheers.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Patrick, for doing that. That's wonderful. If you are listening and would like to give your thoughts on one of the A to Z's or on Noel's recent EP or the MTV Unplugged or Hot Ones or any of these other things that have happened in the world of the Gallaghers, then please do. I think we'll call it a day for today. So just a final reminder, Friday, which is now tomorrow, I think. I don't know what quite is going on and what day it is and where we are, but yes, Friday 11th of October, if you can get down to the Water Rats in London, please do. It would be fantastic to see you there, and show support for the pod. Come along early. As I said, we're going to do a bit of recording. Absolutely brilliant, should be a great show, so please come on down if you can. So it just remains for me to say thank you for listening to the Oasis podcast. A special thanks to all our patrons. You can become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod, where we post various bits and pieces over there, including exclusive episodes. And normally the episodes go up there early, although this one's not, because I want to get it out before Friday to try and plug that gig. Plug. Do follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Oasis Podcast and on Instagram at Oasis Pod, because Instagram still haven't sorted that out. Email me oasispod@gmail.com and please subscribe and review on iTunes. As ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.